iTunes session.
So we are here today with PJ Harvey for a live session that we've all been very excited to hear. Thank you for sitting down with us for a little chat.
Oh, well, thank you.
First and foremost, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you, yeah.
Excellent. What was the first instrument that you formally studied?
A saxophone. Yeah, I learned saxophone from aged about 11 through till about 18. And I actually used to play it very well. And then I didn't play it for about 20 years. So I think for this latest album, that was the first time that I'd actually started to play it again for all that time.
What made you gravitate towards that instrument?
It felt right for the body of work. I could hear such an instrument lending itself well to the atmosphere of the songs.
How many instruments are you up to now? I know you tackle new instruments all the time. Like, what's in the repertoire right now?
Well, I hesitate to say that I play anything well.
Do you dabble in?
I think of myself much more as a writer and a songwriter. And I tend to use an instrument on which to bed my song rather than play instruments for the love of playing them these days. I'm much more interested in words and what I'm trying to say through those words. And that actually requires quite a lot of time. So I only tend to reach for an instrument when I feel that there's a song to be made. And then I will pick up whatever interests me most at the time. So that varies really from year to year. It just depends whatever I'm needing to hear that I can sort of tell what instrument will work well with the type of words that I have. And so that's the instrument then that I'll reach for. But it's much more of a thought process. Once the words are written, then I will unravel what kind of sound I need to go with those words. And that will be the instrument that I'll move towards, whether I can play it or not.
So you're like a musical mechanic picking the right tool for the job.
I think so, yes, maybe. Although a mechanic is quite skilled. I don't feel very adept on any instrument particularly. I guess I'm most at home on the guitar. That feels the most natural instrument to me, where I don't even have to think what I'm doing, it just happens. But all of the other instruments that I've played over the years don't come as naturally to me as the guitar. And require quite a lot of practicing before I can get them to feel like they're flowing.
Your latest album, Let England Shake, was released earlier this year. The first thing that popped into my mind when I listened to it was the quote, "Those that fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it." Was that kind of the headspace that you were in when you were approaching this album?
No, I'd never heard of that phrase.
And oh, really?
I wasn't thinking of that at all.
I'm way off base then.
Well, I always believe that a piece of work, a piece of artwork is open to interpretation. So your interpretation is absolutely valid. And I like that. That's what I like most about the arts, is that it provokes different feelings and thoughts within every different person that comes to it. And I always hesitate to talk or unravel anything behind my own intentions, because ultimately it has to stand separately from me and will work or fail according to the listener that comes to it.
To put finite limits on what it could possibly be seems limiting.
I think it, for me, my own personal opinion is that I always like to come to any piece of work completely open-minded and form my own opinions about it. And so thinking of things that way and how I like to receive others' work, I always like to leave my own work completely wide open for the listener to take as they want, and don't try and influence that in any way.
On your website, you have some stunning visual accompaniments to the album in the short films. One of the visuals that stood out to me was the opening shot of The Last Living Rose, where it's the glass encased skeleton who's almost watching the museum people as if he's the observer. It's really, really beautiful stuff. How did those short films with Seamus come about?
Well, when I was researching for the record, I was in the writing process. I was trying to absorb as much as I could artistically and photographically, as well as reading and watching films, whatever I knew was going to feed the record. And I came across an exhibition by Seamus Murphy. It was called A Darkness Visible. And it was his work from the last 10 years in Afghanistan. And I was profoundly moved by the exhibition, so much so that I actually went about trying to track down Seamus. I'd never met him before, and I'd never done anything like that before, but there was just something within me that made me pursue it. I knew there was something there. There was something that I felt of resonance in his photographs that was similar to what I was feeling towards the work I was making. And sure enough, when we did start to get to know each other, we operate on a very similar wavelength, I think, and very quickly knew that we could do some work together. And that's how these films came about. And I asked Seamus if he could completely make his own interpretations through film of the music. I didn't want to influence him in any way, but just let him do what he does best, which I could see in his work already. I loved what he did, so I didn't want to interrupt that.
So you allowed yourself to be the art?
I just let him run with whatever direction he was taken in. And he chose to do what he called a road trip through England, trying to look at England very objectively, like he would do on any of his other assignments that he's often going about in various different countries, wherever he's been assigned for whatever paper he's working for at the time. And so he chose to look at England in that way, like an outsider, as if he were trying to document it to show people maybe from a different place.
They're beautiful. They're beautiful. Let's talk about your songwriting. Your songs are very, very lyric driven. You said you really focus on the words and that sort of thing. Do you find that you most often have the lyrics in place before the music kind of joins the song?
Well, over the years, my writing's changed quite a bit. When I first started, it was quite different, and the words would only form themselves absolutely with the music and would almost sculpt themselves around the rhythms of the music. But as I've gone through the years, I've become much more interested in the craft of word writing and now spend most of my time and most of my days actually writing short stories, poetry, anything that I'm interested in at the time. Some of those pieces of writing become songs, others remain as different things, maybe as poems or short stories, like I said. But the whole practice of writing is always, for me, towards trying to get better at it. It's something that I don't find easy, and I find I have to put quite a lot of time into it to get anything good out of it. So I have to write quite a lot of things before I end up with anything of quality. And that's why it's something that I do every day and try and practice and try and improve at.
At what point after having something inspiring that you feel like pursuing, at what point do you go, you know what, this could be a song? Like, do you have like a moment where it just seems to make sense and that's the natural progression of whatever you're working on?
Well, quite quickly, I can see whether something is a poem or a song or neither. I think they're very different things. Songs can be quite simple and almost need to be quite simple, I think. And obviously you have the music and the melody as a way of transporting the meaning. So there doesn't have to be so much of its own world going on in it, because the music can help it take it to whatever world it's going to inhabit. Whereas a poem really is quite a complex unit and has to have its own world right there on the page to be read by anyone that might come in and read it or say it out loud, not just the singer or the speaker. So they're quite different things, really. So at an early stage, I can realise if there's a lot going on, if it already has its own world, it might be a poem. But if it's something that's simpler than that, but almost singing already, then it'll move into a song. I mean, sometimes when I'm writing words, they almost sing themselves, and then I know straight away, okay, that's definitely a song.
It reveals itself to
yes,
you.
Yes, yeah.
Do you have a method that you like to approaching the recording process, or kind of like the changing sounds of your album? Do you like each experience to be independent of the last?
Well, it's very natural for me to want to look for the new. I have a real passion for learning. I'm always very excited about learning new things. I think that's why I tend to shift in whatever instrumentation I'm using, purely because it excites me to pick up something I don't know and keep learning something new. And that's also how I go about my writing. I'm always trying to move into new areas that I haven't explored before. And with that looking for the new, it obviously just takes you into different territories all the time. And that's something that happens quite naturally. It's not like I have to plan that. It's the way I've always operated. And the way I operated is when I was just looking at artwork as well, when I was just a visual artist, I was the same. I always experimented. That was the key to my feeling excited and alive with what I was using materials-wise at the time, was to just keep playing with things I didn't know how to play.
So recording in the church just seemed like it fit this album's process?
Yes, it was circumstantial as well as the moment that I stepped in there knowing that this was the right place. I hadn't planned to record in a church, and I'd been looking at studios in Berlin, but nothing had felt right. I was waiting for that moment when I would step into the space and could hear the songs in it. And as soon as I stepped into the church, I knew that was the place for them. And once you find the right space to make your piece in, it can just come alive. You almost just have to turn up there with the right instruments and it will happen.
It helps to pull it out of you.
Yes, yeah. But that's why it's important to find the right atmosphere, I think, beforehand. And I knew that all of the studios I'd looked at before weren't right.
When you're recording a song, I think you could probably endlessly go over and make little subtle changes and tinker. How do you know when to walk away from a song and when to let it be and when it's done?
It's hard. That's an interesting question. It's very hard to define what that moment is. There certainly is a moment when you know that there's nothing more you could add that's going to make this any better. And it's usually just an inherent feeling that you are being moved by the song, and the people that are around you that are working on that piece with you are all being moved in some way. And if that's happening, you know you don't really need to put anything else on there that's not going to make it even better than that. But if you're being moved, if it's affecting you, then it's obviously already working at some level. And I've always been somebody that prefers to leave things quite simple, and I've always taken that less is more approach to everything. And so I tend not to overload songs if they don't need it. If they're working, then leave them alone.
And I guess the follow-up to that would be, now that you've had the opportunity to play some of the album live, do you find that any of the songs have evolved past their original recording?
Yes, that always happens.
Anything that's been surprising to you where it's taken you in a direction that you really didn't see coming?
Yes, actually. A few of the songs, a song like Battleship Hill has become an entirely different song. It's become a barrel of energy now, quite driving, whereas on the record it's quite delicate and slowly builds. It's very understated, but live it's a driving force, and all of the songs will change and grow, and that's endlessly interesting to me, how they do take on their own shape and form and kind of can just happen without you, when they move out into the world and maybe other people will play them when I'm dead and gone, and they've kind of become nothing to do with you, and I love that.
It's like watching your songs grow up into fine adults.
I don't think of them in a human way, no, but I suppose it's like a painting, really. At one point when you're working on a painting, you're very close to it. And you and it are inseparable, really, because it's affecting you and you're affecting it, and it's growing and you're moving with that. But once it's finished, somebody might buy that painting and hang it in a gallery, and you're completely separate from it. It has nothing to do with you anymore. That's more of the feeling.
Gotcha. By now your fans have had plenty of time to adjust to the concept of change and that sort of thing. How conscious are you when going out on tour of the set list and playing songs that you feel your fans want to hear, but also, you know, staying true to what feels right in the moment?
Mm. Well, you've said just what it is, really. I only can play the songs that I feel I can sing honestly and can sing with meaning, because they still have meaning for me, or I can still inhabit them somehow. So obviously songs that I wrote when I was 18 or 19, some of those songs I couldn't sing now with any conviction. I'm 41, and you know how much we change as we grow. So I only sing songs that still have a resonance for me and I feel I can sing honestly, because then I can put all of myself into that song, and I would rather do that and perform that song as well as I can for people than half-heartedly perform something that I don't have any feeling for anymore.
You have various stage personas that you've had through the tours, or incarnations of PJ Harvey. Are these parts of your personality that you magnify, or do you see them as independent of yourself?
Quite independent, I would say. In the same way that as a songwriter, I've always felt that I've never written literally or autobiographically. You know, it's always been employing the techniques that any writer would use, adopting different narrative stances and using one's imagination to inhabit different worlds that you yourself have not necessarily experienced, but still want to try and capture the moment, or capture the emotion or atmosphere behind those experiences. Maybe things that have touched me that I've seen happening to other people. And so I've always felt that my work is something that is something that I move into and practice, like I'm getting lost with the question now, but going back to your question
on stage. Stage persona. Yeah.
I only ever conduct what's happening visually in the best way I feel is going to suit that body of work. So at the moment, for instance, I'm mostly playing the songs from Let England Shake, and the way the stage looks, the way myself and the band are presented, the way the lighting is, the way we're positioned, what type of furniture I have on the stage, everything is to do with trying to create the right environment for the songs from Let England Shake to inhabit. And that's what I've always done with every body of work, with every album, is to create the environment for which those particular songs I feel will sit best. And that goes for the way that I look, as well as the way the whole presentation is.
Just to support the music.
Mm.
You've mentioned it earlier today, or earlier in the interview, about feeling like you've never really mastered an instrument, or that you're constantly learning as you go. Do you feel like music is something you will ever truly master, or do you feel it more that you'll always be a student? And is this motivating or at times frustrating?
Oh, lovely question. I like that. I certainly would never feel like the master of music. I can hardly even say it. It's so beyond me. I feel certainly that I steer my word writing to a large extent. But the moment where the word moves into song, we talked about that earlier, whether it remains a poem or whether it moves into a song, when something starts to become a song, I do feel like I sort of move with where the music is taking me rather than me taking it. And I think it's a matter of being open enough to hear where the song needs to go. But I don't feel like I'm so much in the pointing it in a direction as I do with the word writing. I think that requires a lot more study and hard work, hard craft. But the music, really, I have to be a lot more open to letting that come in and tell me where to go. I don't know if that's making much sense, but music feels a much more open space that I just have to follow and be open enough to hear where it has to go. The words feel like much more of an enclosed space that I have to work really hard at and direct with my own mind.
So you control the words and then the music controls you?
No, it's not as simple as that either. I don't know how I could explain it, and every song is different. So some songs maybe I will be controlling more than others, but it's a very difficult question to answer. That's why I'm intrigued by it. I don't really know the answer.
How do you measure success for yourself? I know in the arts it's hard to quantify or to put some sort of, like, you know, you accomplish X, Y, and Z and suddenly you're now successful. What are your markers that make you feel like you're progressing as a musician or accomplishing kind of what you've set out to accomplish?
Well, with each body of work, I know what I'm aiming towards quite early on. For instance, at the moment, I'm already working on what will become my next project. And at some stage, I'll know exactly what I'm trying to do. At this stage, I don't. It takes quite a long time to find that out through experimenting in different areas. But when I get to the point where I know, okay, that's what I'm doing, then when I get to the end of it, I know whether I achieved that starting point goals or not. And that for me is a measure of success. If I feel that I did what I set out to do within myself, what I was trying to achieve through the words, through the music, then it's successful for me, regardless of whether anybody else likes it or if I, you know, sell 10 records or if I sell more than that. It's still, for me, at that very ground level of did I do what I was trying to do.
I'm sure at this point in your career you've suffered through more than your share of interviews like this, and I can only assume that a lot of the same questions pop up over and over again, and I may be guilty of this as well. But are there any questions that you would love to answer, but no one ever bothers to ask you?
I don't think so, actually. I think through the years, pretty much
everything's been asked.
It's obviously very difficult to talk about music, and it's very difficult to talk about word writing. I always feel like I've never explained myself well at all. And to sit here with you today again, I feel like I haven't explained myself well. I try so hard. I don't think I ever can, really. And to do interviews is quite a difficult process for that very reason, because I always feel like it never comes anywhere close to any sort of understanding of what I actually feel inside. It's difficult to explain. And a lot of it is a mystery to me as well. So I can't think there's anything that I haven't tried to explain in the past, but always failed miserably.
Well, thank you for allowing us into the intimate process of creating music. I know that's kind of an awkward, invasive thing to allow us to do, but we appreciate that you're sharing so much of yourself with us, and thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you. iTunes Session.